You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We're here in sunny Cocoa, Florida, right next to the police station, by the way.
Just in case everybody wanted to know that.
Ellen Little, my fabulous, fantastic co-host, is here with me, my right hand. Thank you again.
Oh, my pleasure. Another fantastic episode today. I'm so excited.
That's right. And we've got Hospice of St. Francis with us today in studio. We've got Dottie Allen, who is here, and she is going to be talking to us later about all the services and all the ways the community can get involved, and very philanthropic. You're the philanthropy officer.
I am the money chick.
Yeah, I was having trouble saying that word this morning. And Dr. Begee said, don't worry, Ellen will say it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Philanthropic.
That's right. And we also have Angela Dunn, who is the operations manager for Hospice of St. Francis, and Mary Larson, my friend, who is also the director of community relations. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Oh, thank it's you. A pleasure to be here.
Thank Don't be shy. It's us. Just an unscripted, fun show, right?
That's right.
And so, so Ellen, I just wanted our listeners to know that Ellen and I have been on air for, what, almost 6.5 years?
Yeah.
And we never ask you on air what you do for a living. So I'd want to give you a couple of minutes to just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Oh, geez. There's a lot. There's and a most list. Of you know that I know that there's a lot of things. I am a business coach, first and foremost. I teach for the Ignite program with FIT, as well as Career Source Brevard and United Way and United Rentals and many other large companies.
Long Doggers,
Meg O'Malley's, Hemingway's. Yeah.
Hey, why does a beer sound familiar there?
I stay pretty busy. I do a little website work, and I also am in two bands. So yes. I sing. We're booked usually for about 4 or 5 nights a week.
Yes. What's the name of your bands?
Buckshot is the big one, but and then we have a little trio called C, which is Sam, Eric, and Ellen.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you so much.
So we play for nonprofits. So, you know, just it kind of goes along with the radio station. For nonprofits. We also play for candidate parties.
You're the friend that everybody wants, but they're not getting it.
That's right. Because I got, and there's only 24 hours in a day.
Yeah. So I went to the NAACP banquet at the Holiday Inn, and I met my friend Aramis Ayala, who is the state attorney for in Orlando. I think it's I forgot what district it is. I'll look it up in a minute. Yeah, yeah. But anyways, it was packed. And she gives such a moving speech about staying focused about what we want to do in life, about respecting other people, respecting other people's race, religion, where they come from, and, you know, what you should know about active racism versus people just coming out in the open and saying things. And you know, I thought when I left there, I felt so empowered, Ellen. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, so we need leaders in our community to come out and say things that would help others. And she got a standing ovation.
It must have been a fantastic, moving speech.
Yes, it was. And then she had to drive to Miami, which was, and I did end up getting a picture with her as usual. And I thanked her for all she does for us in Orlando and for our state. And also, she's got a really nice husband. He is so supportive. And so I think all of us ladies who have a man in our life or a partner or somebody who's supportive, we need to take the time to say thank you to them at some point. We don't always do that, right?
No, we do. And oftentimes, you know, the expression, wind beneath my wings.
Yes.
Well, a strong woman who has a man who is the wind beneath her wings, she can accomplish things that are unbelievably bigger and better than what she would without that support. So yeah. I think it means a lot.
Yeah, and I think I was telling all my friends that one day we should just randomly text our husbands or significant others and just say, thank you for all you do for me. And wouldn't that be wonderful? Because my friends did do it, and their husbands texted them back and question mark like 12 times.
Yeah.
What?
What did you do?
What happened?
What did you buy?
Yeah. What did you buy? What are you hiding under the bed? But anyways, but I think what I took away from that Friday night was like respect. Are we taking the time to respect our children, our neighbors, our coworkers, just people in general? And I think America has to get back to make it great again and make it safe again. We have to start respecting other people. And yes. I see Dottie changing, shaking her head.
Oh, sure.
Well,
sure.
And she was most known for recently for her decision on the capital punishment case.
Yes.
Like in April, right?
Right.
Wasn't that her? But she was removed from a case because she decided that she wasn't even going to go for capital punishment.
Right.
And that was a big stand. I mean, that, you know, you talk about being courageous. She stood up against not just the police department, but the entire justice system was kind of against her. And there she was taking a stand. So kudos to her as well as, like I said, I just can't imagine how powerful that speech was.
It was. And I also met the Cocoa police chief, Mike. He's right next door. And I said, we tape right next door to the station. And so we started talking and I said, well, I had no idea you had those two parking spots for people when they make internet purchases. Like if you buy something from Craigslist or you buy something from Amazon and you don't want to go to someone's house or meet them in an alleyway someplace, right. There's two beautiful spots next door. And he said, yeah, we'd like some more publicity about that. And I said, hey, you're right next door. So he's going to be coming on the show. Excellent. And we'll talk about some of the great things that they're doing for the community. It was a fabulous night, just meeting and greeting people and learning what people are doing for the community.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And then, of course, I went home and I was listening to there was an exchange on TV. Someone was talking about what happens to children who are normally fed breakfast in school and get reduced or free lunches and what happens in the summertime. And a lot of these children are very anxious. They get depressed. They don't have food in their homes. And so the big push is to make sure people in a community who are homeless and who are anxious about where the next meal is coming from, especially children, that they should know there are places like the United Way that have summer feeding programs for them.
Yes.
So I think we should point that out on our show. Did you know there were over like 1,000 homeless families in Brevard?
Yeah, way over, unfortunately. And there's a big concentration, I guess. One of the elementary schools has got the highest concentration. I think it's Jupiter Elementary. That has the highest concentration of children that would certainly be taking part in that program,
right.
But others that maybe not have the same opportunity.
And also they were saying that a lot, oftentimes the children who are on free and reduced lunches, there's a stigma attached to it. And some of the things that happen to some of these children are things like bullying. And it's very sad to think that a child would be bullied just because they're in the line to get food. But it does happen. So they're saying that in order to have the children come forward and accept these meals, to make it fun, try to keep the food in their healthy and original state, and just let the grandparents know as well, because a lot of people, their parents are working and they're being cared for by the grandparents. But of course, then you run into another issue. Does the grandparent have a car? So now they're looking for volunteers who can actually drop the food off for children.
Right.
So if people are listening and they have some time to give in the summer, you just look up which programs in Brevard is
feeding
these children.
Well, the Children's Hunger Project.org, they have a full Brevard County Schools summer food program, and they have a list of everyone who will be participating in the summer food service program, and it's through Monday through Fridays. So we still need to work on something for the weekend, I'm sure, and that's probably where the United Way comes in.
Right.
But certainly during the week.
And we're very fortunate here in Brevard. We have a lot of businesses that partner up with the United Way. We have a lot of families. I mean, we live in a very great place, and that people do give a lot. Right. And so we have to say, you know, for all those people who support the Housing for the Homeless, the Brevard Homeless Coalition, Hospice of St. Francis, all these things, it's wonderful.
Yes.
So just get involved. It's not like the children are going to go hungry. There are places here that we can get food for them.
Amen.
Right? So on that, I just want to say, too, that, Hospice of St. Francis has been on our show for a while, and we've been one of their sponsors of our show, and we've been out in the community bringing awareness to all the great things that they do, to keep people, to let people know that you can live in live with dignity and also die with dignity. And as a nurse, I have to say, I see a lot of that, especially in the long-term care facilities. So we had set this up a while back to have Hospice of St. Francis come back and speak with us about all the other things they're doing besides the services. How do we get money in? How do we get people to, if you've got events happening, how do we get the community involved in that as well? Because it's not only about making money with Hospice of St. Francis, it's about giving back as well.
That's right.
And this is one of the hospices that I support. So we have Dottie here, and we have Angela and Mary. So welcome to our show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So Dottie, tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510 WWBC a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with Hospice of St. Francis.
Okay. Well, I've been in Brevard County for 14 years, and I came down here to be the president of Wusthof Foundation.
Actually. Yes, I remember that.
Back in the day when Wusthof was a not-for-profit health system, and back in 2010, Wusthof was sold to a for-profit hospital chain. So for-profits don't do philanthropy, and I'm a philanthropy executive. So that was the end of that part of my career. But when I was at Wusthof, I was very much involved in the hospice program that we had, and subsequently went to work for a hospice down in Stewart that is a little bit bigger than Hospice of St. Francis, but also a not-for-profit. And eventually, I was so tired of going back and forth. I'd be down there during the week and come home on the weekends. I finally said, I can't do that. I have to move back to Brevard. Brevard is my home. So fortunately, I met Joe Killian, who's the president of Hospice of St. Francis, shortly after I came back. And he offered me a job to be chief philanthropy officer and help establish a comprehensive philanthropy program for Hospice of St. Francis. What makes a not-for-profit hospice really special is that it relies on philanthropy to help fund some of the services that are not paid for by insurance. A lot of people think that the Medicare program just pays for everything, but in fact, that's not true. The basic hospice benefit is paid for by most insurances, but surrounding that, and again, this is a philosophy of our organization, is that hospice is a part of a continuum of care that starts way early on before hospice is even a consideration. When a person's beginning to have symptoms and problems and pain associated with a chronic disease, a chronic disabling disease, and they need help. They need someone to come in and help them develop a plan of how to get their symptoms out of the way so that they can live a full life, go and seek the treatments that they need to, and essentially have the best life that they can.
And know that, and they're comfortable with the thought that somebody will be there for them at the end.
Yes.
Yes.
So
it's like a bridge.
At a point in time, hospice is usually appropriate, and the person will get recommended for hospice, certified in hospice, and that's when our flagship service really takes over, and we work with the patient and the family for the patient's life. But the family and the patient all have grieving issues. And imagine adults grieve in a certain way. Children grieve in a very different way. So we offer this fantastic bereavement program that's not paid for by anybody.
And we always say that the pets also grieve.
Yes.
I saw a couple of pets this weekend grieving for their little partners who had died.
Yes.
And the pets were sitting on the blanket waiting for the dog who died to come back. It really make you cry. So, Angela, you're the Angela Dunn. You're the operations manager.
Yes.
What does the operations manager do, and how did you get involved with Hospice of St. Francis?
So, what do I do?
A lot.
Let's consider this.
You wear many hats.
I wear many hats. So, I handle the paperwork side. Is probably a good way to say it. I process any gifts that we have come in, and I work hand in hand with Dottie. The two of us are an absolute team, and whatever needs to be done, whatever events, whatever mailing needs to be handled, We work on, we do that stuff together.
So your job description's kind of in pencil.
Yes.
Angie works for the foundation.
Yes. And we also have Mary Larson. Isn't it wonderful that we have all these mics in our fine studio now?
Yes, we do.
And they're all working, right?
Yeah.
We're absolutely. Operational mics.
Yeah. And no headsets, which means that we don't have to have bad hair.
That's right. We don't have to squish our hair, right? And so we also have Mary Larson. And I've known Mary for a while. I think she came on the other studio with us at one point as well, where the cat was.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So Mary, so you're the director of community relations.
Yes,
I am. And what exactly do you do for Hospice of St. Francis?
Well, my role really is to tie together all of our programs that serve the community. So our volunteer program, our bereavement for adults, our bereavement for children, and our community outreach program. We provide a lot of education to caregivers of elderly and terminally ill patients. We provide health fair information, and we basically try to educate people about hospice services so that they know what's available to them when the time comes for them or their loved one.
And for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with our friends from Hospice of St. Francis. Hospice of St. Francis is Brevard's longest serving and only independent nonprofit hospice care resource. They were founded in 1977, and they continue to meet the community needs, high level of needs that we have in our community. They try their best to understand and be compassionate to patients who are alive and well, and they will be there for them at the end of their lives as well. So, you know, we often hear a lot about palliative care. So anybody can answer this question, but for our listeners who are tuning in, a lot of people don't understand the difference between palliative care and hospice care. So does somebody want to take that question?
I'll do it.
Okay.
Sure.
I'll do it.
Palliative care, actually hospice is palliative care.
Right.
Palliative care is defined as comfort care. But we have a program called St. Francis Pathways to Healthcare that actually works with the patients I mentioned earlier that they're not hospice appropriate yet, but they're having problems with congestive heart failure, COPD.
So like it's maintenance. Maintaining.
It's when they start to have health issues associated with their chronic disease. So let's say you've got somebody who is going for chemotherapy and they have side effects of the chemotherapy that are making them ill. Or you have somebody who has congestive heart failure or early stages of cancer and they're having some side effects. The palliative care program goes in and they do a consultation and evaluate the patient's needs, and they maybe make recommendations for medication or for other forms of care that help that patient get rid or reduce those symptoms and problems. So the patient can then continue to live more of a normal life. Hospice happens when the person is determined probably to have about 6 months left to live if the disease continues as it's
a progression
happening.
Yes.
Doesn't necessarily mean that the person will die in 6 months. Sometimes people get recertified several times and may live for years afterward. But it's when the doctor determines that the person could really benefit from an interdisciplinary approach to this time of life. And it's at that point that we go from having the consultation, which is by a nurse in the palliative care program, to having an actual team of people with doctors, nurses, nursing assistants, social workers, chaplains. What am I missing?
Volunteers.
Yes.
Precious, right?
This whole interdisciplinary team that looks at the patient's needs and the family's needs and establishes a whole care plan, multidisciplinary care plan, that will be with that person for life, essentially.
Right. You know, and the thing is, all of us want to make life better for ourselves and for our loved ones. We all want to do meaningful things. We hope that when that time comes, we'll have somebody there for support and compassion to the end. But oftentimes we find a lot of people don't have that, and it can be quite challenging. And this is where hospice comes in with the volunteer support and the team, the professional team that you have. Give us some examples of people that you've come across that moved down here to Florida and have no one. And this is when it's important that in a community that they know there's an organization like Hospice of St. Francis.
Right. Most of the patients that we have are living in their private homes. But we also have patients that are in facilities, skilled nursing facilities and other facilities. One example, and then I'm going to throw this over to Mary for some additional ones, but one example would be the person who lives down here. All of her family is in the north, so she doesn't have anybody to come in.
They moved away from the snow.
They moved away from the snow, just like I did 14 years ago. So she's living here. She's living in her own private home, and all of her family's in the north. She has some friends, but not necessarily people that are going to come in and do what a family would do. The doctor has said that she is eligible for hospice. So hospice comes in and establishes a system for her, a care plan for her, that helps her with as many things as we can possibly do. Now, if she needs somebody to stay with her 24/7, then she may be eligible to be transferred to a facility where she can have that particular care, because that's not what we do, except when the person is in crisis. However, a person living alone has a challenge, and so we try to provide hospice services to make that person feel very comfortable.
Right. And Mary, there's such a stigma attached to putting someone in hospice, right? But it takes a lot of courage to have that conversation about the end of life and choices. Why do you think culturally we have such a problem discussing end of life with our loved ones?
Well, it's very hard to face death. It's hard to face losing someone that you love very much, and it's a very difficult conversation to have. I think also in our culture, we're very removed from death. A lot of death happens in hospitals, and so we're not familiar with it. But the truth is that most people who are at their loved one's bedside when they're on hospice care, and they witness their loved one die peacefully, comfortably, and with
pain
loved
free.
Ones pain-free, mm-hmm. Having said their goodbyes, having their pet there on the bed with them and their loved ones around them, they actually describe it as one of the most miraculous, beautiful things they've ever seen. And that's hard for us to imagine, but it's very important to maybe keep that image in your head if you do have to have a conversation with your loved one. How do you want to say goodbye to your loved one? How does your loved one want it to go at the end? Do they want to be in a hospital bed, or do they maybe want to be in their own bed at home? That's what we do. A lot of people think hospice is a place that you go, but we bring the care to you in your home. And so your loved one can be there in the comfort of their own home with their loved ones surrounding them. And as Dottie said, if someone doesn't have family and they're in a nursing home, we send a volunteer in to sit with that patient and make visits, and even can send a volunteer to be there when that patient is transitioning to the next.
And this is a good time to give the website for Hospice of St. Francis, and you know, for people who are probably tuning in, they could go and look up the website and see. So do anybody have the website, Mayor? Angela? Angela's quiet. We're making Angela talk.
Make Angela talk. It is www.hospiceofstfrancis.com. Absolutely.
You know,
and great website, by the way.
It is.
Too.
It's so easy to understand. I've always liked their website.
And I have to say, like, one of the first times that Angela, and I think it was, I forget the gentleman, Andy.
Yes.
Was the gentleman that came on. But we had the best, my husband and I had the best discussion after that, because we did the five wishes. Oh, and, wonderful. Of course, anybody who gets a copy of that is going to be like, really? Is this really what you want?
Yes.
But we had a great discussion about it. And because we don't have children, we have to kind of rely, we have to make sure we send a lot of gifts for our nieces and nephews
and
so they take
good
care
pets.
Of us. Right, exactly.
Well, my husband has actually put his cat in our will.
Oh, boy.
Who's going to take care of the cat? I'm like, God, did you really
I did
have
that
to?
Too.
Yeah, I'm like, did you really have to do that? But he did. But, you know, what I noticed, too, as a nurse is, you know, the hospitals have beautiful lounge areas. And they've got beautiful corridors. But it's not the place for you to start the end-of-life discussion. Really and truly, the hospital waiting room is a place Well, you should come when someone is ill and you're there waiting for them to recuperate, get better, whatever it is, right? But oftentimes families will actually have fights in those waiting rooms about what they're going to be doing for mom and dad. So on our next segment, we're going to, I think we're Pastor Paul is here, our producer is here. He's going to tell us how many minutes we have left. Three? Wonderful. So why do you think people use the hospital corridors and the lounge areas as a place where they can have a conversation about death and dying? That should be done at home, maybe at Thanksgiving, maybe Christmas, maybe a dinner. You shouldn't wait till someone is on their deathbed to say, hey, what do you want us to do for you, right?
Yes,
right.
And Ellen mentioned the Five Wishes book, and we do have those available at Hospice of St. Francis. That's a wonderful, easy tool for introducing that conversation. And when you actually use it and go through the pages, it asks questions like, who would you like to have with you? Would you like to have music surrounding you as you're, you know, preparing to transition to the next phase of your existence, whatever comes next? Do you want to have loved ones around, or would you rather be by yourself? It really gets you thinking about kind of the particulars of it, and it makes it easier, I think.
Yeah.
It really was. It was much easier than I thought it was going to be.
Really?
Yeah.
I had a patient once who used the Five Wishes, and believe it or not, the patient ended up given someone a second chance in her life that she hadn't spoken with for 40 years, and that someone was her own sister. So I think when you go through the Five Wishes and you ask who do you want to be there, and I think it makes people think as well about death and dying and second chances, and most importantly, forgiveness. Because as you leave this great planet, you know, all of us are here on a vacation on Earth. It is borrowed time. People start thinking, well, what can I do with the rest of the time that I have? So I strongly recommend people picking up a copy of The Five Wishes, not when they're in their 70s and 80s, but actually pick it up when you're in your 20s or 30s.
Of course, the music might change.
Yes.
The musical selection.
Because how many families have fights over things, and then all of a sudden, one sister moves away, one brother moves away, a child moves away. And if you don't reach out to them, they're not going to reach out to you. And someone is waiting for someone else to pick up the phone or send a text. But there comes a time when you have to forgive your family members so that when you leave the planet, you leave in a way that you don't leave any loose ends behind. So I think the Five Wishes helps you to, would it be accurate to say it helps you to tie up loose ends?
Well, it sets a perspective. And the one recommendation that I will make, and we can maybe pick it up later, is that you pick a day each year. Do it every year, one day. And I would suggest the day after Thanksgiving, which I call Thanks for Giving Day.
Yes.
And have that be the day that you talk about these things, because you're in a mindset of gratitude at that time.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful time.
And you're nice and sleepy.
Yeah.
So Ellen, I think we're going to
Wrap up this quick part of the segment. We're going to listen to our sponsors really quickly. Thank you all for helping us out. But we'll be right back after these words with our folks from Hospice of St. Francis. So stay tuned.
Point with CETA and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of CETA McGee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters and founder of Simply CETA Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of CETA and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haulaway available at a fraction of the cost of most stores, and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms.
MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Sometimes I want to say my real name, which is Sita Durjan Ishmael Begee, but then I can't because I don't even remember the name myself. One day I said, is it really that long?
It's that long.
And now that I'm running for office, I don't even know which name to put on the
ballot. I've typed it a lot. Like, boy, that's a long name.
I'm like, some of my friends, they say, put Sita Begee. And then some people say, put Sita Durjan Begee. And then some people say, put Sita Durjan Ishmael Begee. And I'm like, I'll just stick with one, but I don't know which one. I'll figure it out by the 18th of this month.
I think just Sita.
Just Sita.
Yeah, there you go. Like Madonna.
Oh, yeah.
Just be Sita.
You know, it's a trick. It used to be easy before 9/11. You just put Sita Durjan Begee. But after 9/11, with Homeland Security, you have to put the name that matches your Social Security and your naturalization certificate to, you know, whatever, your passport. Mm-hmm. And at one point, they said you could send in your naturalization certificate and have it fixed. I said, oh, no, I'm not giving up this thing. Because next thing you know, they lose it in the mail. I can't. And then I have to leave. Oh, no, I'm not leaving this great country to go anywhere. With all our problems,
we're still the
best. Just
make sure that's in your 5 wishes. Yes. Of what we're supposed to call you.
With all the problems, America is still the best.
Amen. Yes,
the best in the world, right? So we were just talking about cultural things about death and dying. And my mom, although we were Hindus, she chose to be buried. She didn't want to be cremated. And she was adamant about that. I remember her with this beautiful green eyes looking at us. And I would say, Ma, we want to videotape what you want to happen to your body after you leave this planet, your soul, where, you know, soul is going to come back. We always believe in reincarnation, but your physical body. And she said, well, this body has been through too much, so I don't want it to be burned. I don't want it to be cremated. And so she chose to have some drums and be buried in the cemetery. And I'd lived in that village in Trinidad until I was 18, and I'd never stepped foot in the cemetery. Well, needless to say, I always thought you had to buy the land, but you don't. They just give you a piece of property, a piece of land, a little plot. And she's buried next to people in the village that she knew, you know, that drank alcohol in a shop and, you know, things like that. But it's kind of nice because if you want to go and visit, you can. But then I asked my sisters and brothers, well, how many people actually go in the cemetery to see their loved ones? I was shocked. A lot of people don't go. They say, you know, that they want a place where they can go and have say a prayer or talk to this person. But I think they go once or twice and then people don't go. But here in the States, the cemeteries are really nice. You've got flowers and pavements. Over there, it's mud.
Well, and it's cultural, too, right? We talk about that all the time, about whether people, whether they go to cemeteries or whether they have certain services or so forth. So it is. I think it is cultural. My family grew up. We went to Arlington National Cemetery on vacations. That was like a, you know, and did the whole pencil on the front of, to see if we could find the oldest tombstone. And
But that's a beautiful cemetery, too. Arlington, yeah. I mean, you could have picnics there.
Absolutely.
That's how beautiful it is,
yeah,
right?
It's gorgeous.
So why do you think people are so fearful of cemeteries? Some people are just fearful. I think if you live your life...
Too much Stephen King.
Yeah, I think if you live your life in such that you appreciated life and you were kind to people and you showed you were compassionate to their cause and you were not ignorant to their race or religion or whatever it is about a person, you lived a good, fulfilling life, then you won't be scared to die. Because if God calls you home, they say live your life every day when you wake up as if it's the last day on earth. And I think if you do that and God forbid something happens, you really don't have anything to worry about, right? So some of the services offered by Hospice of St. Francis, we have the Care Center, we have Caregiver Education, Grief Support, the North Star Program for Children, Volunteer Services, and you honor veterans. I know there's a lot that Hospice of St. Francis is doing with veterans. So Dottie's shaking her head. So tell us a little bit about the programs for the veterans.
I'm going to turf that to Mary because Mary, this is a part of Mary's world.
All right.
So,
well, one of the things that we recognize in hospice, I think a lot of people in our society now are recognizing that veterans deserve our utmost respect and care all through their lives, but especially at the end of life. We want to make sure that they know that we have not forgotten what they did for our country, that they sacrificed, and that we recognize that you know, their greatest love is their country and their service. So we try to honor each and every veteran who comes onto our service by presenting them with an opportunity to tell their military story. And many of them still have things that they have not talked about and that they do want to share before they depart this world. So we send a veteran, a volunteer who's a veteran, out to visit with the veteran patient. And immediately they have an instant bond of service to our country.
And they bring the flag.
And they bring a
flag. Because I was in a patient's room once and somebody from Hospice of St. Francis showed up. And when our resident saw the flag, boy, he brightened up.
Mm-hmm.
He just felt this connection with that gentleman. And his wife was there, and they wanted me to be in the room with them. So I remember that. And they folded it up a certain way, too.
Mm-hmm. They bring a flag. They bring a certificate stating their appreciation for their service. We always give them, actually, a hat that has their branch of military service on it. And we give them a pin. But the most important or precious thing that we offer them is a handmade patriotic quilt. And those quilts are made by volunteers in our community, and they donate them to our We Honor Veterans program so that every veteran has a symbol that our community loves and cares about them and appreciates their service.
Yeah, and what a great way to say thank you, right? Especially at that time of life at the end. So one of the things that Hospice of St. Francis tries to get our community engaged through is volunteering. And so, Dottie, how do we get, what is our pitch? How do we get more people to sign up? Because to become a volunteer, there is no distinction. You just have to be able to love people and want to give back to the community. You have no age limit. Anyone could be a volunteer. So how do we get people to sign up?
Well, most of the people that become volunteers are people that have had a hospice experience themselves. Whether it is a loved one that was on Hospice of St. Francis or sometimes another hospice. But they appreciate the impact of hospice services on patients and families, and they really want to help in some way. many of the people that we have as volunteers are older, retired, but not all. There are a lot of people that have time and would like to be involved in various ways and maybe might like to have their skills and their interests tapped. So some people want to work directly with patients. Mary mentioned that some of the volunteers will actually go in and sit with patients for periods of time. We also have volunteers that will go in and sit with a patient at the time that the patient is getting ready to transition. So the patient never has to be alone. So people that are called to do that type of service, we offer them opportunities. But there are other people that just want to work in an office.
Oh, yeah, or, answer phones, website, or answer with phones children.
Or work, you know, support the children's programs. So Mary does what I would call a skills assessment and an interest assessment to determine where the person would be best placed and also what time they have available. Sometimes it's a couple of hours a week or it could be more. But it's a way for them to, I guess, rally around a cause that speaks to their heart, do something that they find interesting and pleasant.
And get involved. And so we have a lot of people that have no children and they may have some change in the bank. Or they might have a life insurance and they might say, you know what, I would like to give my money to Hospice of St. Francis because of all the wonderful things they're doing for community and for people to make their lives easier. So for people like such, how would they reach out to you to say, I want to get involved? Because I know people that have left a considerable amount of money to the Catholic Church. I have friends who've left their life insurance to a different state. Or they just give it to a charity that they want. So if someone wanted to do something like that, they can do that with Hospice of St. Francis, correct?
They absolutely can. In fact, you're singing my tune right now.
Yes.
because that's the part of the program that I'm responsible for is the philanthropy. We have a lot of people who have had a hospice experience and have said, we were so grateful for what you were able to do for our family that would like to give back in some way. But we also have people who understand the value of hospice and the impact of hospice. Maybe they haven't had their own personal experiences, but they understand why it's such an important cultural and community service that they say, I can give you $25 a year right now, but I'm going to put you in the will, and I don't have any kids, or I, you know, want to give a little bit to my nieces and nephews, but whatever I have left over, because I know that it will be transformational to your organization and it will help you do more for more people in the community.
Yeah.
So it's a way of paying it forward, I guess. It's a way of making sure that the future of this organization and this community is as vibrant and as strong as it possibly can be.
Right.
So we have several thousand people a year that actually step up and do that.
And where do you get most of your referrals, Dottie? Like, I mean, because like I talk to the wall. If the wall can talk back, I would. And Ellen and I have been to, we attend a lot of functions, and so do you guys too. But, you know, sometimes you'll go into a room and you strike up a conversation with someone who had no idea where you were the day before. And before you know it, that person tells another person and another. And that's how, it's like a chain, right? Yeah. So your banker, the people you do your dry cleaning at, anywhere. So where do you primarily look for referrals for someone to do such a thing for hospice?
Well, we do a lot of outreach in the foundation. We send several newsletters a year to groups of people throughout Brevard County. We try to be as active as we can through Mary's community relations programs. To me, it's not about the gift. And I think this is an important thing for me to say. For me, it's not about the gift. I'm not asking someone for their money. I'm asking people to get involved in a mission that makes a difference. So it's like inviting people to be part of a family. You know, any one of us, if I said to you, Sita, what are the top three charities that you believe in and that you like to support during the year, you'd probably be able to tell me what
right.
they are. Most people can do that. What I'd like to see is Hospice of St. Francis be one of the top three for many, many people.
And grow and continue and to grow, thrive and grow and continue to give more.
About the relationship. Yes. It's about the family.
And one of the programs that you guys offer and is the North Star program for children. And I'm going to have Angela, if you want to tell us a little bit about the North Star program, because everybody grieves differently, right?
Everybody does. And, you know, as adults, we know how we grieve and we all go through the stages of grief, and it can be different. Well, for children, their response to grief can be very different, and depends on their age how different it is. So our North Star program meets the children where they are, for as young as 3 years old, all the way up to adults. You know, it helps children up to 18, and it works in groups with them in therapy that is really age appropriate. So 15-year-olds are going to grieve different than a 5-year-old. You know, a 5-year-old doesn't understand why daddy hasn't walked in the door, or, you know, somebody hasn't come home. The counselors will help them in ways, using toys, whatever methods that they need to. Our North Star also has camps for grieving children, you know, a couple times a year. I know this summer we're going to have an art camp. We're partnering with Fusner Art Museum, and they're going to have a program where they're going to create things together as part of working through their grief, which is very important.
And all of that is on the website as well. Mm-hmm. And so, Mary, one of the other things, too, you know, caregiver education is so important. Not everyone can go to school to become a nurse or nursing assistant or home health aide. So what are some of the programs that Hospice of St. Francis offers for caregivers of all of a sudden has a spouse or a child that has become dependent on them?
We have a wonderful caregiver education series. It's 6 classes. They're free. We're offering the caregiver education series at the Sunflower House on Merritt Island starting this month, June. So they can find information about that either through our Facebook page or on our website, or they can call our office, 321-269-4240. And ask for our caregiver education program. That program covers things like, you know, how do you care for someone who has dementia? How do you work with someone who doesn't have the memory that they used to have, or whose behaviors are changing? What are the resources in the community to support you through that time? How do you deal with end-of-life decisions? You know, you need to make decisions about power of attorney, living will,
and
all
have
of
patience.
Those
most important. Because so many people get so irritated with the elderly or people who are ill. And I think the caregiver education teaches you how to be, you know, to be more compassionate too.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of support in the caregiver education classes because you're with a group of other people who are also caring for their loved ones through this stage. We also offer caregiver support. So there are caregiver support groups that we have, and you can come and just talk with other people who are going through the same thing. And we have a professional counselor who provides support to the participants of that class as well. Caregiver burnout is a real thing. A lot of times what we see is that our caregivers are getting sick, but they're not taking care of themselves because they're so busy taking care
of someone else. Well, yeah, you can't fix everybody else unless you fix yourself, right?
And actually, that was one of the precursors in my 5 wishes, is because my husband is just not, you know, neither one of us really are really good caregivers. I mean, I'll ship him off someplace. He'd ship me off someplace.
No one's
but nonetheless,
born with those
but that
skills.
Was one of the things with Sunflower House. And who knows if that's going to be available when our time comes. But nonetheless, it was find some support group and
absolutely
kind of put something down there so that way he knew that he wasn't alone in it. And all the things that we were putting together wasn't so scary anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like I said,
you know, and the thing is, you know, it is so cultural with just living and leaving our planet, right? Because in some cultures, you know, the elderly lives at home and it's a built-in social security system for the elderly. But here, people try their best to take care of a loved one until they can no longer do it. Lifting somebody is terrible on your back. Not everyone has a Sara lift or a Hoyer lift or one of those mechanical lifts. Not everyone knows how to transfer somebody properly. I mean, you could end up in jail if you throw somebody down and they break a hip. Is considered abuse. People are scared, you know. So oftentimes we need all these education so that we can help someone at home. Right. Because otherwise you have to put them in a nursing home or ALF. And even that, you end up with insurance issues. Who is going to pay? Right. Who who's going to pay for an ALF, who's going to pay for an Medicaid bed or Medicare bed. I mean, growing old in America is a problem, Miss Ellen.
Yes, I know.
I mean, even if some people, I had a resident that the family thought she was going to pass away within maybe a year. They'd admitted her at the nursing home. They ended up spending $1.5 million cash. She lived for 12 years.
Yeah.
And she did not have a living will that said what to do with all her money. So she, and the nursing homes require you to pay out of pocket until you hit a certain amount. So this is a really good time too for people to see an attorney as well and set things up so that you're, and I see Dottie nodding her head about that. It's very crucial that you should put your, have everything lined up.
And the programs are set up enough far in advance. Like the five wishes is the first part, and then there's pathways, right? Then there's, I mean, there's so many. It's such a graduated program.
It's your life. It's a timeline of your dash from the time you're born and the time you leave. Right. So, Dottie, any upcoming events? Because we can't help and we can't meet the needs of the community unless we have money to do it. And it's the truth. We have to have it. So we all know we've got invitations for so many things that are happening, but I like to attend things for hospice because I like Hospice of St. Francis and I love your mission. So tell us about some of the upcoming events.
I'll tell you about an upcoming event, but I just want to comment on the fact that we had in April, we had our second year of a luncheon called the Purple Iris, and Cedar, you were there this year. We had an absolutely...
I took a day off from work for that. I took a vacation day.
We had an unbelievable, I want to call her an inspirational humorist, but she was she's a comedian. Her name is Kay Francis, and she was absolutely fabulous.
I love her joke about the glasses. She opened with that, and it was fun.
she had a message that was very pro hospice service. But she also, because she had been her mother's caregiver for 7 years, but her whole message was really about lighten up, see if you can find a way to reduce your stress and just have a lighter life, because life is short and you may as well live it as best as you can. But we do have an event that's coming up on October 25th. It's called Legends. And it is a recognition event for notable people in the community that have done a lot to raise philanthropy as a community cultural value. I can't tell you who the honorees are this year because they're still secret. But last year we had Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Kim Rodriguez, and Susie Wasden. And it's a very elegant event. And it's really focused on people who have had a tremendous breadth of influence in the community in terms of how they have helped organizations and how they've raised philanthropy.
Yeah, and I've been to that one too, and that's in the evening, so I don't have to take a day off.
Right, yes. Right. Cocktail attire.
Yes. So for our friends who are tuning in today to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, our guest, our in-studio guest, is the good folks from Hospice of St. Francis. We have Angela Dunn, Mary Larson, and Dottie Allen. And, of course, Ellen has given me my 4 minutes left. Great. So Hospice of St. Francis enables people to encounter end of life free of pain, die with dignity, as well as encourage living with dignity. They care for patients and their families. And I want to take it one step further and say that Hospice of St. Francis, once you start thinking about them and you start thinking about the five wishes, you also think about your family, your legacy, what you're leaving behind, how you're going to leave this world for better, for the next generation, and leave a great footprint, and also to make amends with family members. I see so much in our working as a nurse, and I won't say where because I've worked for 28 years as a long-term care nurse, but I have seen sisters not speaking with sisters. I have seen mothers and children not leaving this planet and not reconciling. I have seen people fighting over a trailer that's worth 10 grand. Is it really worth not speaking to someone? And so I think today our message on our show should be, while you plan for end-of-life decisions, to also take the time to give someone in your life a second chance and forgive. Because our life on this planet is just a vacation. We're just here for X amount of years, and we might be rich, we might be poor, we might be Hindu, we might be Muslim, we might be Christian, but I think at the end of the day, everybody wants to be loved and appreciated. And while we're alive, we should take the time to do that. So we're asking all our friends on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, if you have a loved one that you haven't spoken to for a long time, forget about it. Just pick up the phone and call.
That's right.
Right? Just send a text. So give us the website one more time for Hospice of St. Francis.
It's www.hospiceofstfrancis.com.
So, Dottie, what else can you tell our listeners with the remaining minute or two for someone who wanted to become a friend or family to support Hospice of St. Francis? Like, why is it so important for people to care? People have money. A lot of people have a few dollars, and they're thinking, well, what should I do at the end of the year with it? Because that's the time when you get your contributions in and all that. So, I mean, we've got United Way, we've got Hospice of St. Francis, we've got the Hunger Project, we've got all these great things in Brevard. But for me, nothing is more near and dear than helping people to live their life with dignity.
Well, I think that it's incumbent upon each one of us to really think about our own personal values, what's important to us. And as I said earlier, use the day after Thanksgiving. Call it Thanks for Giving Day and have it be a day where you sit and say, okay, who do I care about? What organizations are important to me that meet my values? And, of course, we hope that Hospice of St. Francis will be one of them. But pick your top three and make sure that you support those organizations. If everybody did that, I can tell you that Brevard's philanthropy would go off the charts.
Right, right. And the other thing is, I mean, it's, there's a myth out there that you have to be dying in order to qualify for hospice. You don't. I can say as a nurse, you don't. Right, Mary? There are certain criteria that you have to meet, and you don't have to have like a full-blown cancer diagnosis. There are other ways, you know, failure to thrive and things like that, CHF, COPD. So tell our listeners really quick why they should not listen to that myth that you have to be on your deathbed to qualify for hospice.
Well, no one has a crystal ball, including the doctor, so that no one really knows when it's going to be our time. But the doctors will look at what symptoms a person is having, and really that's how they decide whether a person should qualify for hospice or not. And we do take care of people with heart disease, lung disease, kidney disease, neurological disease, stroke, things like that. So, you know, again, you don't, most people think we take care of just cancer patients who are, you know, in the last
week, all the time.
And that's not true. We have patients who are actually thriving once they come on our care, and they are able to continue living their lives the way they would like.
And really quick, you don't have to be only Christian to be admitted into Hospice of St. Francis, although it's a nice name.
It's a nice name, but we are non-denominational. We are the only independent nonprofit in Brevard, and we were founded by volunteers from Titusville.
And here's an easy way to donate. If you're an Amazon shopper, you can go to smile.amazon.com. and name Hospice of St. Francis as your charity
Absolutely.
Of choice. So easy ways for you to donate, not just your time, but also you're going to shop on Amazon anyway.
Like we always say, a little change.
Little change never hurts.
And so the takeaway today on our show is when people are leaving our planet, when they're leaving to go wherever the good Lord has taken them to, they want to be surrounded by love, and they want to be surrounded by a family, and you want to leave this planet knowing that someone cared about you. So I think Hospice of St. Francis offers that.
Absolutely. We'll make sure that all of this great information, ladies, thank you so much for sharing all of this. We'll make sure it gets on our website as well as all of our Facebook pages. Thank you for the gifts. We got cool little fan gifts for our phones.
Yes.
So we're excited about that as well. Sita and I love gadgets. But we will see everyone next week on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here. Same station, same time, 1 o'clock, right here in Cocoa, Florida. See you next week.
Great. I think we could.